Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Nida Daf Zayin. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur. And even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur will begin 8 lines from the top of Daf Zayin. Before we begin the shiur, let us glance at the outside margin of our Gemara, where we see one of the features of the Shas Ozer, whereby we provide topic headings and structural notes as needed. In this case, the topic heading Vinosei and structural note Mivneh have been combined into one note. You'll see a trapezoid or volcano shape featured. We've indicated that this is a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of a give and take structure in the Gemara. So as you skim down the rest of this omid until the Mishnah, you will notice these shapes appearing in alternating directions. With the narrow part facing upwards, they represent, in this case, they represent kushios, questions, al-ho de ko'omar hulin hatvulin lechalo kechalo domi. In the previous shiur, daf, we had, concerning davov, we saw a reference to dough that had been kneaded, but the chalo tithe, which is given to the kohen, had not yet been removed. That's called Chulin, that's tavul, tavulin from the Lashon tevel, meaning untithed dough. We maintained in our last shiur that it had a din of chala, that even though it's essentially chulin, but nevertheless, since there is latent chala in it, it's treated as if it's chala. And we also mentioned in our previous shiur that chala has a lot of characteristics that make it like Truma. Let us now continue with the Gemara, starting with essentially a question. The question itself lasts a number of lines. You can see we've indicated this using a long question marking, the kuf that's encircled to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text with a descending vertical dash line indicates the length of the question. So the Gemara asks, is it really so, v'chulin hatvulin l'chala Kechala domu? Is it really so that chulin, a dough, that common dough that has not had the chala tithe removed from it, is it really viewed as chala? And the result of that, by the way, is what we learned at the end of our previous year, that if a zav and a tohor were unloading or loading a heavy burden on a donkey, so the tohor person would be considered tome with regard to this type of dough. The Ha'tanya, the Gemara continues. We have a Tanaic source that you can see appears in a frame. Isha shi tvulas yoim, a woman who had been tomeah, and she now went to the mikveh and is awaiting sundown. She's called a tevulas yom. A tevul yom has a status known as a second level tumah, a sheni latumah. In general, a sheni latumah will ruin truma, it will ruin chala, but it doesn't affect chulin. So the source says, Isha shehi tevulas yom, losha eso isa, she is allowed to knead dough, the koitze heimeno chalosa, and she removes a quantity of dough that eventually will be declared as challah, but right now it's simply dough from which she's removed a clump of dough, which will, as I emphasize here, will eventually represent challah. And she places it on a vessel known as a kfisha or an anchusa. And these are vessels that are not mekabel tuma, one of the pshatim here is it's a vessel made of boards, so that it doesn't have a base kibul, it doesn't have an interior. So she places it on one of these vessels, the umakefes, and she puts it next to makefes. The loshen makif is to place something, two items, one next to the other. So she places the challah, this tithe or this clump of dough, next to the batter that she's prepared, the kore lo shem, and now proclaims it as challah. Bipnei shehu shlishi. Her contact with it, she was a sheni level, and as such, her contact with it would make it a shlishi. Ushlishi tohor b'chol. Shlishi means a third level; it's one level lower, and a shlishi does not affect chulin. The e-amris, now the question comes to a climax. If it's so that chulin hatvulin l'chalo kechalo domu, that chulin that has latent chalin, chulin is common dough, that has in it latent chalo, is treated as if it were chalo, ha tamis nehu. She made it tome. So, what has been accomplished here? The Gemara answers, Omar Abaye, Kol Shevadai Metamechulin, any situation or tuma level that would ruin Chulin, that would definitely ruin Chulin, Gozru al Sfeko Mishum Chulin Hatvulin L'chala. The rabbis imposed a ruling that would treat it, if there is a doubt, like we had in the case that we ended off yesterday, the previous shiur, with the Zav and the Tohor, where maybe the Zav leaned on the Tohor, or vice versa. There was a suffix over there, and in such a case, so they made a gzera on the suffix, treating it as treating the chulin as if as if it were challah. In other words, the chulin that would have latent challah in it is viewed as if it were challah. However, the high tvul yom kevon delo mitama vada chulin, a tvul yom does not ruin chulin whatsoever. Lo gozru alav mishum chulin hatvulin l'chala. So, and that's the case of that we just saw in the most recent Tanaic source, where since we were dealing with a woman who's a tvul yom, she was able to handle the dough with its latent chala in it and not ruin it at all, not mitama at all, because a tvul yom doesn't have any adverse effect on chulin. This is in contrast, of course, with the case at the upper part of the page that we called Nish'an, where we were dealing with a Zav, and a Zav is an Av Hatuma, he would have ruined Chulin. He would have been Metame the Chulin. Let us continue in the Gemara. The Gemara asks, V'ho me'eis le'eis shebenida. Me'eis le'eis is the topic we've been dealing with since the beginning of the Masechta, the issue of the 24-hour retroactive tuma concerning a woman that experiences a nida, a blood flow. Devadai mitama chulin, velo gozru al sveiko mishum chulin hatvulin l'chala. A nida mamish, that's a vadai. She does not. She ruins chulin. She's with mitama. She's an avatuma. She would ruin chulin. And yet, the me'es le'es, which is a situation that we would call a suffix. It's a type of doubt situation. Maybe she was a nida. There, we don't consider the chulin hatvulin l'chala as if it's chala. And how do we know to say that? The Omar Mar, this we had learned on Daf Vavam and Beis. We have a this is a reference to a Gemara that we had on Vavam and Beis, where it was said, Kidlo mine Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchok, the tvulin bechulin shenasu al taras hakodesh, where me'es le'es shebenida will ruin chulin that's treated with a Kodesh standard with a sacrificial standard, v'lo b'chulin shenasu al taras truma. But me'eslei shebenida will not adversely affect chulin that's treated with a truma standard. And here the main point has to be added, and we've done this by writing in between the lines. There is an assumption right now that the same din would apply to tvulin, to chulin hatvulin l'chala. Just like we say me'eis le'eis shebenido doesn't ruin chulin shenasu ataras truma, so too me'eis le'eis shebenido will not ruin chulin hatvulin l'chala. So this represents a challenge to the principle that we lay down, that namely that if something will vadai, in the vadai case, ruin chulin, so the suffix in a doubt situation, we will treat the chulin hatfulin l'chala as if it were chala. Yet here we see, me'eis le'eis shebenida, where the vadai nida will ruin chulin, and yet in the me'eis le'eis situation, which we are calling a suffix, does not ruin chulin hatvulin l'chala. Namely, we don't view the chulin hatvulin l'chala as if it were chala. And now that point is based on a certain assumption over here that we equate chulin shenasu ataras truma, chulin that's prepared with a truma standard, with we equate that with chulin hatvulin l'chala. As we mentioned earlier, chala is a, as we'll call it, is a form of truma. The Gemara answers, there is a difference though. We cannot make this equation. Hasam, in the case of chulin shenasu ataras truma, where we said that me'eis le'eis shebenida does not affect it, lo psicha behu truma. There's no actual truma mixed in. Psicha means mixed in. There isn't any truma mixed in. It's just where people apply to their chulin a high standard of purity, and they view it or they treat it as if it were truma, but it's not actual truma. Hacha, in the case of the dough with the latent challah in it, psicha behu truma. There is truma mixed in, so that even though me'eis le'eis shebenida may not affect chulin shenasu altaras truma, it will affect chulin hatvulin lechala. The Iboy Asema, another approach to this is simply to say that Hanoch me'eis le'eis the Rabbanan. Leave aside, don't ask from the case of me'eis le'eis shebenida, because it is a gzeira the Rabbanan. It's not a case of a real suffix tuma, as we've explained in the past, and we mentioned this in our previous year as well, that me'eis le'eis is an example of something that the Tosfos HaRosh claims at the very bottom. He says, Pirush tuma kalo mishar tumas d'rabbanan. It's a very low level of tuma, and therefore, even though in general a suffix of something that a vadai would affect chulin, the suffix in this case is considered of a lesser level, and hence we will tell you that it won't affect even chulin hatvulin l'chala. As we continue with the new Mishnah, we glance at the side of our Gemara where we have a nosei, a topic heading, Be'ezen noshim amrinon dayon shaitan, regarding which women, which kinds of women will we say that when they have a blood flow, we will not apply any retroactive tuma. So, as far as which women are included in this concept of dayon shaitan, this is a machloikes between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua. In the upcoming dapim, we're going to see the name Rabbi Eliezer in a couple of forms. What do I mean by that? There are a number of different Talmudic figures that carry this name, and in our Gemara it will be quite important to distinguish between the different Rebbe Eliezers and Rebbe Elozers that we will run into. The name Rebbe Eliezer, when spelled with a Yud, is a reference to the great Tana, often referred to as Rebbe Eliezer HaGodol, who was a Rebbe, was a teacher of Rebbe Akiva, and he was a contemporary of Rebbe Yoshua. And we often find Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua involved with arguments throughout the Mishnayos. There is another Rabbi Elazar, and without the Yud, in fact two of them will appear in upcoming Dapim. One of them is a Tana, Rabbi Elazar, without the Yud, Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua. And there is an Amora carrying that name, Rabbi Elazar ben Pedos. He is an Amora. So, in general, when we're learning through the Shas, we don't pay that much, we don't place that much emphasis on the names and the, even though it is certainly worthy to, but in this particular sugya, the names are going to appear together, and in each situation, each one will have a different role, and hence it's important to make this distinction. So our Mishnah continues. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Arba Noshim Dayon Shaitan. There are four women that, as we said, that if they experience a blood flow, we will not apply retroactive tumah. In effect, we're saying that it was very unlikely that they ever had a blood flow before, and that this is their first time, and hence nothing to, no reason to impose the retroactive tumah to mitama retroactively things they had come into contact with. And now, what is included in his list? Number one, Besula, literally a virgin, but the Gemara itself will spend time in defining that, so we'll be brief right now and continue. Meuberes, a woman who is pregnant. A woman who is pregnant, so the monthly female menstrual cycle ceases. Therefore, if in a state of pregnancy she should experience blood, it would be fairly unusual, and hence there's no reason to consider that maybe she was experiencing a blood flow before, and hence we will say daya shaita. It's enough that we're metamer from that point on. Manika, a woman who is nursing. Uzakena, a woman who has reached a chronological age where biologically she ceases to have her period. Omar Rabbi Yoshuani lo shamati ela besula. I have, as a tradition, only the besula case, the virgin, where we will apply the rule of daya shaita. Continuing now on Omid Beis at the top, avol halacha kerebi Eliezer. So that even though I heard only one, Rabbi Yeshua says we shall rule like Rabbi Eliezer, which would include four. Ezohi besula. Now here we've used a double underline to highlight the four examples of women that we will say daya shaita. So what is a besula? Kol shelo rosa dam miomeha, a woman who has never had a blood flow. Afalpi shenesua, even though she is married. Meuberes, mishe yivoda ubra. Meuberes is a woman who's reached a level of pregnancy where her pregnancy is noticeable. Meniko, ad shetigmol espina. A meniko is called a meniko until she weans away her son, her child, from nursing. Nosna bina lemeniko. If she gave her son to a nurse, a wet nurse, gimoloso, weaned him away, oi, mace, or the child died, Rabbi Meir Omer, metama mace lace, Rabbi Meir says, well, at that point then, if she experiences a blood flow, we will impose the halacha of retroactive tumah 24 hours retroactively, v'chachomim omrim daya shaita. The chomim nevertheless say, we still apply the rule of daya shaita and no retroactive tumah. Ezohi zekena, what is considered an older woman, an elderly woman, or an old woman with regard to the issue of blood cycle, a monthly cycle, and the lack thereof. Kol she'avru alel shalosh oinai samuch liziknasa. Any woman that three time periods have lapsed, and she, during those three time periods, which are explained at greater length in the Gemara, these three time periods passed, and she didn't experience a blood flow. And this occurred close to that age, at that age when she is a mature woman. We'd like we could use the word aged woman, but it's all relative. We're talking about a woman who is reaching what we call menopause. Rabbi Elazar Omer, Kol Isha She'ovru Aleo Sholosh Oinois Daya Shaita. According to the Girsa that appears on the inside margin, this would be a different Tana. This would be Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua. So he says, any woman that three onos went by, daya shaita, there will be no retroactive tumah. Rabbi Yossi Omer, muberes umenika she'ovru alein sholosh onos dayon shaiton. A woman in pregnancy or a woman who is nursing that three of these time periods went by and she didn't experience any blood flow, so we say dayon shaiton. Uvame omru daya shaita. When do we apply daya shaita? In other words, we've described women with the passage of different time periods, and we say, well, now daya shaita. What is that? What context is that? Or with regard to what is that? Biriya rishona. That's with regard to the first blood sighting after these time periods went by. Avo bishnia, but a second sighting of blood after these time periods went by. So mitama me'es leis, it appears that she's gone back to seeing blood, so that we'll treat her as a regular woman and apply retroactive tumah. V'imrasa harishona me'oines, if the first blood sighting was something that happened as a result of some type of sudden fright, if you will, something that was beyond her control, some external cause, so then af hashnia daya shaita, then even the second blood sighting that happens as a result of, let's say, non-instigated or non-motivated circumstances will be treated as a daya shaita, no retroactive tumah. Tanya, the Gemara opens up with a Tanaic source in which you see a discussion between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua that were featured in our Mishnah. Amar lo Rabbi Eliezer lo Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Eliezer says, Rabbi Shatta lo shamata, you didn't hear of four examples of women that we apply the rule of daya shaita. Vani shamati, I did hear. I heard. I have a tradition. Ata lo shamata lo achas, you heard of only one example. Vani shamati arba, I heard four examples. And now an analogy. Ein oimrim lemi shelo ro es hachidish yavo v'yaid elo lemi shiro'ohu. This is a reference to the practice of establishing a new month on the new month with regard to the lunar calendar. Witnesses who saw a new phase of the moon would come to Beis Din, come to the court, and testify that they saw the new lunar cycle, and as such, they were fit, because they saw, they are fit to testify. So one would never say to someone that didn't see a new lunar cycle to come and testify. We only ask of those who saw the new lunar phase. And his analogy is to the fact that you didn't hear of the three more women, and I did. So I have a tradition, and hence I am telling you there are four women that we would say daya shaita. Kol yomov shel Rabbi Eliezer, while Rabbi Eliezer was alive, hoyu oisin k'Rabbi Yeshua, they ruled like Rabbi Yeshua, meaning which is lechumra, a stringency, because by limiting the din of daya shaita to one example, that means the other three examples will apply retroactive to them, which is a stringency. So during the lifetime of Rabbi Eliezer, they followed Rabbi Yeshua's approach. La'achar p'tirosu shel Rabbi Eliezer, after his passing, hichsi Rabbi Yeshua es hadavar liyoshno. Rabbi Yeshua restored the practice to follow the original way, which is like he claimed in the Mishnah itself, that the halacha is really like Rabbi Eliezer. The Gemara is curious about this. Why then, while he was alive, did they not want to follow Rabbi Eliezer? K'Rabbi Eliezer b'chayov maitaim alo. Why, when he was alive, did they not follow his teaching? The Gemara answers, Mishum de Rabbi Eliezer, Shamuti hu. Rabbi Lezer. Now here's a machlokus between Rashi and Tosfos as far as what Shamuti means. According to Rashi, it means that Rabbi Lezer, though a very great and towering figure, he was excommunicated. And that's because of an incident that took place in Maseches Bava Metzia, where he argued in too vociferous or forceful a fashion against the majority of sages, and that resulted in their distancing him from the community and putting him into a form of excommunication. According to Tosfos, Shamuti comes from the Loshon or the name Shammai. Shammai, as many may know, was a famous Tana that argued on Hillel, and in the overwhelming majority of cases, the halacha will not follow the teachings of Shammai or Beis Shammai, the school of Shammai. And Rabbi Lezer was a product of that school. He was a follower of the Beis Shammai school, and hence the halacha will not go like him. So the Gemara is saying here that why during his lifetime did they not follow him is because he was Shamuti Visovar, and they figured, E Avdinon Kavosei Bechago, if we follow his practice in one area, Avdinon Kavosei Bachrenaisa, then people will come to follow his rulings in other areas. And because of the honor accorded to Rabbi Lezer, the honor due to him, we wouldn't be able to protest their following his opinion. When we know that in those other areas, the halacha is not going to follow his way, because he represents, as we say, either Shamuti excommunicated, or because he follows the school of Shammai. So, therefore, even in this area of Daya Shaita, which is one area where, technically speaking, we should be following him, but the fear was, if we follow him here, people will follow him in other areas, where we clearly don't go like him. On the other hand, though, we wouldn't be able to protest it because of the honor due to him. That's all true when the man was alive. The Achar Ptiras of Rebbe Lezer, after Rebbe Lezer's passing, the Motzinu Mochinan Behu, we would have no trouble protesting or countering those that try to follow his opinions in other areas. So Hichzir Asadova Leyoshna, with regard to the issue of Daya Shaita, the original way was restored, the original way being that we do follow him in saying that there are four women that we apply the rule of Daya Shaita to. As we continue in the Gemara, we have a structural note and topic heading that accompanies this section. On the outside margin, we have an indication that the nosei, the topic, will go till Daf Ches Omid Beis, a rather long topic, and the Mivne here features a Roman numeral 1 and 2, then that refers to Lefi Shmuel V'Rebbe Elazar, and we've noted in parentheses Ben Pedos to indicate that this is an Amura. Halacha k'Rebbe Elazar b'arba. We follow the Tana Rebbe Eliezer in four areas of halacha, and the Gemara will eventually ask the Suleka, are there no other areas? We also notice triangles that appear in the Gemara. These are the four cases that we follow. Rabbi Eliezer. Let's now learn the Gemara. We pointed out that there's a Roman numeral number 1. There is, we will mention Mirza Shem C on Daf Ches Omid Aleph, a Roman numeral number 2 around halfway down the page, where the Gemara says V'chein Omer Rabbi Elazar, and that's a reference to Rabbi Elazar the Amora, Belozer ben Pedos, where he says, likewise, the halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer, that's Rabbi Eliezer Hagodol the Tana, the Dalit in four places. So now, our Gemara. What we will be seeing here are Tanaic sources. You can see there are a number of framed sections. All of these are Tanaic sources where Rabbi Eliezer is featured. Now the Gemara, on the second wide line in the middle, Omar Rav Yehuda, Omar Shmuel, Halacha k'Rabbi Eliezer ba'arba. Halacha will follow Rabbi Eliezer in four, with regard to four areas. Hado d'Amoron. One is that which we've already said, and that's a reference to the din of Dayon Shaitan. The idach, the other area, is describing a woman who is about to give birth, and she's experiencing, prior to the to her birth, she's experiencing a blood flow. However, the blood flow is accompanied by pain. In the event that a woman, let us say, was leading up to her birth and was experiencing a blood flow, which culminated in the actual birth of a child, we would say that the blood flow that she was experiencing with the pain prior to the actual birth, even if it lasted a couple of days, would be considered blood associated with the child, as opposed to blood associated with Ziva. In general, if a woman experiences 3 days of blood flow outside of the Nida days, she becomes what's called a Zava. And if, as a result of becoming a Zava, she would have to observe 7 clean days, 7 days of no blood flow, and then brings a sacrifice on the 8th day. So the source mentions Hamekashe, a woman who is experiencing blood with pain and leading up to a birth. What happens if the pain subsides and the blood continues and then she gives birth? That's called Shofi. So the woman that we just described that was leading up to a birth, experiencing blood with pain, Kamo tishve v'tehei zava. How long a time of cessation of pain with the blood flow continuing would categorize her as in fact a zava, as a result of the stopping of pain? We would then say that retroactively, the blood flow that she was having over the last few days was not child related. And as a result of it being not child related, then she becomes a Zava, so that after she gives birth, in addition to observing laws of childbirth, and which include halachas of Tumah, she'll have to observe a separate unit of time to purify herself from her Zava status. So how much time would that gap be between the pain she was experiencing and the actual giving birth? So the source says, Me'ace le'ace, a 24-hour gap in time. In other words, if for 24 hours the pain stopped, even if the blood flow continued, she would be considered a Yoledes Bezov. Divrei Rebbe Eliezer, v'halocha kidvarov. This is according to Rebbe Eliezer, and the source tells us that we shall follow his ruling. V'idach, a third area. Hazov v'hazova shebodku atzmon, yom rishon umotzu tohor, yom shvi umotzu tohor. These are two examples. Azav is a man, Azova is a woman. Both of these people have become tome because they had 3 sightings of these different emissions. They are expected optimally to observe 7 clean days, and that involves a body check that the emission has stopped over a period of 7 days. Every day, a body check. The man checks his body, and the woman checks her body, as we've seen previously with regard to the checking cloth. In the case of the woman, we want to make sure that there's no red that appears on the checking cloth. It would be a sign of blood. Now, this source features a situation where they didn't check every day of those 7, what's known as the 7 clean days, but rather there was a checking on the 1st day and a checking on the 7th day, and they revealed cleanness. Ushar hayomim lo bodku, but during those interim days they didn't do any checking. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, harei elu becheskas taro. Rebbe Elazar says that this is sufficient, and they will be able to gain a status of tara, of purity. Rabbi Yeshua Omer, Ein lohen elo yom horishon v'yom hashvi'i bilvad. They get only 2 days credit. In other words, they'll have to observe another 5 days of cleanness. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Ein lohem elo yom shvi'i bilvad. Rabbi Akiva is of the opinion that the first day is worthless because after the first day, who knows what happened? All that we have is, as far as he is concerned, we have the seventh day, which counts as 1 day, and she'll have to observe another 6 clean days. V'tanya, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Yosi Oimrim, Nirin Divrei Rabbi Eliezer, Midivrei Rabbi Yeshua. His, Rabbi Eliezer's approach seems more likely than the approach of Rabbi Yeshua. V'divrei Rabbi Akiva, Midivrei Kulan. Rabbi Akiva's approach would be the best of all of them. Aval halacha karevi Eliezer. You notice we've used a squiggle underline to emphasize this term halacha, which is essentially the main point of this piece of Gemara, to show how we follow Rabbi Eliezer in these additional cases. A fourth area, the fourth area in which the halacha will follow Rabbi Eliezer, idach disnan. V'idach, the fourth case, disnan, the following source. Again, you see a frame concerning this source deals with the area of tumas kelim, vessels and their ability to absorb tuma. The source says, achorei kelim shenitmu b'mashkin. The outside of a vessel that came into contact with liquids that were tumei. That's, again, achorei kelim, the outside of vessels, shenitmeu b'mashkin, that became tomei through their contact with liquids. By way of preface, we're going to be dealing in an area known as tuma d'rabbanan. It's a rabbinic area of tuma. The food and drink are not capable of imposing tuma on people nor vessels. And here we're going to be talking about vessels, and they will be absorbing tuma, so we know we're in a rabbinic realm. In general, the rabbis imposed this kind of tumah where liquids can communicate tumah to vessels, as even though on a Torah level that can't happen. But they made this ruling in anticipation of a certain kind of liquid, and specifically the body emission of a zav, which has a status of an av hatumah, that would be able to metama kelim. But as we said, outside of that kind of liquid, general regular food and drink that themselves became tomei cannot communicate tuma to vessels. So we continue with this source dealing with the outside of a vessel that came into contact with mashkim, with liquids that were tomei. Rabbi Elazar Omer, metamin es hamashkin v'ein poislin es ha'oichlin. These vessels now, if they come into contact with liquids, other liquids, so they will metamin es hamashkin, vafilu dechulin, even if it's chulin mashkin. Chulin is something that in general is not as sensitive to tuma absorption as, let's say, truma and kochim. But here we say that the outside of these vessels will metame chulin mashkin. V'ein poislin es ha'oichlin v'afilu detruma. And the outside of these vessels that had become tomei through contact with mashkin will not ruin food, solid food, even if it happens to be truma food. Rabbi Yeshua Olimer, metamen es hamashkin, upoislin es ha'ichlin. The Rabbi Yeshua is stricter, and he says that the outside of these vessels will impose tuma onto mashkin and will ruin food. Omer Rabbi Yeshua, Kal v'chomer. Uma, he says that his point of view is based on a kal v'chomer. Uma tvul yoim she'ein mitame mashke chulin poisel ochle truma. A person who has a tvul yom status. We mentioned this earlier. This is an individual who had been in a state of tuma, immersed himself in a mikveh, and is awaiting sunset. During that interim period after immersion in the mikveh and sunset, he's called a tuvul yom, and he has a sheni status, a second level tuma status. So Rabbi Yeshua reasons, mind you, a tuvul yom, which is not doesn't have any effect on mashke chulin because of the rule concerning a tevul yom is that he doesn't ruin mashkim chulin. Even though other sheni latumas, there is a gzera that a sheni latuma or any tuma will make a liquid shoot up to a rishon level. There is an exception in the case of a tevul yom. So a tevul yom has this leniency that he's not metame mashkim chulin, yet poisel ochle truma. A tevul yom that comes into contact with truma food, he ruins it. As a sheni latuma, he ruins the truma. Achorei kelim shemetame mashke chulin, the outside of vessels that you agree, even Rabbi Elazar agrees, are metame mashke chulin. So you see that the outside of vessels is more severe than tvul yom. So eino din sheposel ochle truma certainly should be able to ruin a truma food. So Rabbi Yoshua is arguing against Rabbi Elazar, why don't you acknowledge that the outside of vessels will ruin Eichlin of Truma? For Rabbi Elazar, his response, Achorei Kelim Derabonan. The outside of vessels becoming Tomei is a rabbinic ruling. Utvul Yom Deiraisa. And the ability of Tvul Yom to metame things is a Torah level consideration. The Rabbonon midoraisa lo avdinon kavachomer. Rabbinic laws, like the case of Achorei Kelim, are not to be derived from Torah laws through kavachomer. The midoraisa ein oichel metamekli vein mashke metamekli, on a Torah level, food doesn't affect a vessel, and beverages do not affect vessels. V'rabbonan hu degozer gzeira mishum mashkin dezav v'zava, and the rabbonan, they in their wisdom imposed a rabbinic ruling concerning liquids because, or in anticipation of liquids that emanate from a zav or a zava, those body emissions are metame, they do metame on a Torah level. So, mashkin de'alulin lekabel tuma gozru v'hu rabbonan. Mashkin, beverages that are subject to Kabbalah's tuma, easily subject to Kabbalah's tuma. So, regarding mashkin, they took extra precaution and imposed tuma to it, a rabbinic tuma. Oichlin de'ein alulin lekabel tuma, food doesn't readily become tome. In fact, food items do not become tome on their own unless they have become wet beforehand. And therefore, lo gozu behu rabbona. The rabbona did not impose any. They didn't impose a tuma upon the food. Hence, my approach, says Rabbi Eliezer, Achorei Kelim will be metame mashkin, even if it happens to be chulin, but they will not affect food. The Gemara asks, Umayshno Achorei Kelim denokan? Why does in the source that we read, why is there an emphasis placed on the outside of Kelim? The Rashi explains, Umayshno Achorei Kelim denokan? Linkot toche kelim. Why not speak about the interior of vessels? Ukigon shin denogu mashkin tameim lusocho. Vavunami derabonan, where tome mashkin touched the interior of a vessel, which would also be a rabbinic consideration, rabbinic phenomenon. So the Gemara answers, mishum dekili. The rules concerning outside of vessels are more lax or lenient than the rules regarding the inside of vessels. And as a result of this difference, only with regard to the outside of vessels will we say that a distinction is made between beverages that become tomei and food that touches those outsides that do not become tomei. Now, this idea of keli, of leniency with regard to outside of vessels, is illustrated in this source, Disnan, kli shenitma me'achorov b'mashkin. And this is the rule. A vessel that became tomei because of its contact with mashkin, achorov tomei, the exterior of the vessel is tomei, tocho, ozno, ogno, yodov, tohorid. The interior of it, the handle, the rim, all of these other parts of the vessel remain tohor. The achorov, we say, as the outside becomes tomei, however, the toho, the interior, the ozno, is a type of semicircular handle for a vessel, or the ogno, the rim, and yodov, a handle, they remain tor. Nitmo toho, however, if the interior of a vessel becomes tomei because of contact with mashkim, kulo tomei, the interior and the exterior and all the other parts of the vessel become tomei. And as Rashi says, it's therefore only in the case of the exterior of the vessel do we make this distinction between food and drink. However, with regard to the interior of the vessel, even Rabbi Eliezer would be moide, will admit, will concede that if food touches the interior of the vessel, that had become tomei through contact with mashkin tomeim on its interior, the food will become ruined. The Gemara now asks a question that relates back to Shmuel, hence we have a semicolon to indicate that there isn't a continuation of flow of the Gemara. My komashmo and Shmuel, what is Shmuel telling me by saying that we follow Rabbi Eliezer in four areas of halacha? Bekulu tanan, in each one of these cases, it says in the source, hilchasa. And that is what we try to accomplish with our squiggle underlining that we did, as you can see in source number 2 and in source number 3. And even in our Mishnah, which we didn't mark off, but at the top line of the Mishnah, there is also a reference to Halachic Rebbe Eliezer. So what do I need Shmuel to tell me that we follow Rebbe Eliezer in these cases when it says it's built into the sources? You might say that, well, I need Shmuel's ruling to include the case of the outside of the vessel. This fourth example, which spoke about the outside of vessels becoming tomei, in which it didn't say that the halacha shall follow Rabbi Eliezer. Maybe that's what Shmuel's point is. Well, the lema, then, if that were the case, then Shmuel should have said halacha Rabbi Eliezer b'chorei kelim. Then Shmuel said, should have taken up the slack, so to speak, where in the three cases, I didn't need to be told anything about following Rabbi Eliezer because it was built into the Tanaic sources. So Shmuel should have said that the halacha follows Rabbi Eliezer with regard to the outside of vessels. So the question is, why does Shmuel have to spell out that the halacha follows Rebbe Eliezer in four areas? Elaha komashmon. It is the following that Shmuel is teaching us. She'ein lemeidim halacha mipi Talmud. That as a rule, one is not to learn practical law from conclusions that are reached in Mishnayos. The purpose of Mishnayos was not to serve as a source of how one is to follow in halacha lemaisa. That was a goal of the Amoraim that is accomplished in the Gemara, but not in what our Gemara refers to as Talmud. We would refer to as the Mishnayos or Brises, or using the general term Tanaic literature. So it is not the role of Tanaic literature to communicate how one is to follow practical law. And therefore it was important for Shmuel, who is from the Amoraim, to tell us this particular point. And namely, that in four areas we follow the teaching of Rebbe Eliezer, and it wasn't sufficient that this information was revealed in Tanaic sources. The Gemara at this point will ask, is it so that only in four areas? And this Gemara continues till continues down through Daf Ches, but since we're learning the Gemara in the context of the Daf Yomi, so this would be a very convenient place to stop, but realizing that we're going to be picking up this general discussion, Mirtz Hashem, in our next shiur. So with that, we conclude our shiur for today.